is In the Loop at the Half with Betty Lou.
Walmart shares are rising. The euro has been getting hammered this morning.
Midway through the trading day, where did we start? Where are we going to finish? It's In the Loop at the Half with Betty Lou.
Volatility is something that we've heard a lot about in terms of the equity market.
Non-stop coverage of the markets. In the Loop at the Half with Betty Lou starts right now on Bloomberg Radio.
Welcome to In the Loop at the Half. This is the place where we get you caught up on what's happened since the opening bell. And we look ahead to the closing bell. Thanks for joining me. I'm Betty Lou. In the Loop at the Half, presented by PowerShares QQQ. Visit PowerShares.com for up-to-the-minute ETF holdings, pricing, and trading information. Invesco PowerShares, leading the intelligent ETF revolution. Stocks are rallying today, so it's the second day of gains after we've had 2 weeks of losses, essentially. We had Alcoa reporting their profits yesterday, kicking off the earnings season. Their profit exceeded estimates. We're also waiting the Fed minutes from the March meeting. That could give a further indicator to markets on where the Fed is thinking with quantitative easing and the tapering process. So stocks are now up by about, for the Dow, 60 points. The S&P higher by 0.3%. The NASDAQ is also rising by 0.7%. Bond markets are, the yields are coming down a little bit, down about 2 basis points. 2.7% even is where the 10-year yield is trading. Currency markets, the dollar is pretty much unchanged. Oil prices are now climbing. They continue to climb above that $100 a barrel level. 103 is where WTI crude is. And gold futures are trading just a little bit lower, $1,305 per ounce ahead of those Fed minutes. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg Radio.
The drill down.
We get down and dirty, drilling into the big story of the day. And one of the big stories that we woke up to this morning is news out from Toyota, one of the biggest recalls in auto history. The company is recalling up to 6 million vehicles on a variety of safety issues. Jamie Butters, our Detroit auto editor, is joining us, or our auto editor from Detroit is joining us. And Jamie, how big of a deal is this for Toyota?
Well, it's embarrassing, and it's a big number, you know,
to say the least.
Yeah, it's, you know, it doesn't seem to have the taint of scandal around it the way the unintended acceleration recalls did in 2009 and 2010, or the way these GM recalls do that they put off for so many years and people died in the process. Toyota says they don't know of anybody getting hurt, let alone killed in it, you know, by any of these vehicles or any of the defects in these vehicles. But it's a huge number, and you know, Akio Toyota is trying to, you know, put Toyota's bad past behind it from that,
right,
that little period where they were trying to grow too fast and got away from a lot of their core principles. And so it's a black eye for him.
It certainly is a setback. Jamie, tell us what is in this recall. What are the vehicles are we talking about, and what exactly are the safety issues?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's really all over the map. You know, they announced it as one recall, but it's really like five recalls.
Okay.
There were, you know, five different technical defects, you know, ranging from some that were airbag related and others that were coil. You know, there were some electrical defects. They affect some of the really prominent vehicles that we really associate with Toyota, the Camry and the Corolla. You know, global top sellers. And then some others that really we don't see in this market, you know, the Volts, I think, and the Fits, and some of these, you know, cars that are sold mostly in Japan and other markets. So it's, you know, they've only identified about 2.3 million of the more than six that are in North America. They haven't yet given us a U.S. Specific number, which is a little surprising because they should have to know where those are, but you know, they're working on it. Obviously, there's a lot of data they've been going through.
Yeah, I can imagine lots of data that they are going through, and it seems like, Jamie, that almost every day we wake up and yet another automaker is recalling their vehicles. You've got General Motors, of course, now Toyota, but Mazda a few days ago had to recall vehicles as well. So are we facing some sort of breakdown here with automakers, or are they just getting better at detecting faults?
Yeah, it's a It's a little more the latter. I think it's really an abundance of caution, and we especially feel like we see this. On the one hand, recalls happen all the time, and we usually just don't pay attention to them.
Right,
unless
minor.
It's the vehicle you own, it just doesn't make that big of a splash. But when we have these big recalls in the news, like the GM one, then we're all much more alert to every little recall. I mean, the Mazda one was 40,000 vehicles, right? And not a huge number.
Exactly.
But it still, it got headlines. Plus, there were spiders, so who doesn't want to write about that?
Right.
But what we're seeing, like a lot of these with Toyota, I'm not sure they would have done these recalls, or some of the extra ones with GM, right? One of the recalls on the Chevy Traverse and these crossover SUVs, it's if your service airbag light is on, then your vehicle is recalled and you have to come in. Well, if the service airbag light is on, you probably needed to get it serviced anyway.
Yeah.
But for years, we used to tolerate cars with, service lights that would come on. And, if it was humid out or, people would just say, jiggle the wire. And, and that's really not acceptable anymore. We have such computerized electronic cars. I mean, they have to be working. And if they're telling us they're not working, we have to trust that they don't work and they need to be fixed.
All right, Jamie, thank you so much for joining us. Jamie Butters, our auto editor in Detroit, on the 6 million vehicle recall by Toyota.
Now, the In the Loop at the Half, Trader Radar.
Trader Radar, we bring the action on the trading floor to you. We find out what is on traders' minds. And on the Ring Central phone line is Doug Sciocca, the CEO and partner at Kavar Capital Partners. Doug, you're watching what the Fed is doing very closely. And we're going to get the minutes out in just a few hours by the Fed. Is any of it going to be market moving to you? Or what are you looking for? What insights?
Hi, Betty, and I think everyone's going to be certainly tuned in what they have to say, and obviously the results of the meeting came out a couple Wednesdays ago, and we were very pleased to see that there was no disruption in the course of their taper, and we really hope that they give an indication that that is going to be sort of their mantra as they move forward under the new Yellen regime.
Why are you pleased with that, Doug?
Well, I think for a couple reasons. I mean, I guess, first of all, Betty, the Fed is frankly probably the only entity that has not validated the recovery in the economy, as anemic as it may be.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think that we have the same monetary policy in place as we did, and maybe even more aggressively accommodative than we did 5 years ago when they got to the point where they provided such easy money, I think they are far past now the point of diminishing returns in that policy. So I think we need to see them continue to reverse course. Bear in mind, out here in Kansas City, right, we are in the Tom Honig and Esther George camp, where it feels very good to keep a little powder in the gun in the eventuality that we do see a turn in the economy.
So you believe that as long as they stay on that path, that the markets will continue to do what?
I think the markets could continue to do for the next three quarters what they did in the first quarter, right? We think that it's going to be less of a bias toward equity-only portfolios, and it's going to necessarily require a little bit more balance as we look to sort of navigate some of this volatility. We think the recent volatility is actually pretty beneficial from realigning expectations of stock investors with reality. And I don't think that there'd be any surprise if that volatility intensifies around this first quarter earnings report. Now, the reality in our firm's opinion is that the market is demonstrating that multiple expansion is not part of the expected return calculus for 2014.
Because of why? Because...
Well, because you have the Fed that's exiting, right? So you have the end, at least on that path of easy money.
Mm-hmm.
So companies are going to be judged based not on this critical codependency that easy money has intertwined with Fed policy that underwrites risk-taking by otherwise risk-averse investors. It's going to call companies down the carpet to say, what type of level of profitability are you producing?
So therefore, Doug, then that means that volatility, as you say, is going to continue probably throughout the rest of this year.
I think it will, and I think that's good.
All right, Doug, we've got to leave it there. Thank you so much. Doug Sciocca, the CEO and partner at Kavar Capital Partners. And a quick check on the markets at midday. The Dow up 55 points, the S&P higher by 0.3%, and the NASDAQ is up by 0.7%.
In the Loop at the Half callback.
Time now for callback. Callback is a segment that brings back a topic from our earlier In the Loop Bloomberg television program. And we're staying on the markets. Michael Purvis joining me again, the chief global strategist at Wieden & Company. And Michael, you were just listening in on our prior guest with Doug. And you would agree with Doug, right? You would say, hey, you know what? The selling, this volatility is going to continue. And actually, it's kind of a good thing.
Yes, I overlap with your prior guest a fair amount. I think you know, one of my calls for the year has been higher volatility, but also higher actually equity prices. So I'm not neutral on prices. I actually think we can range higher here. I think I'm actually the high on the street or close to it at 2100.
What are
you? At 2100 at year's end.
Okay.
Which is certainly at the high end of consensus. But when you, if you put that in perspective, you know, that's a couple hundred points up from 1900.
Mm-hmm.
You can easily range up in a more volatile market. I mean, volatility goes both ways, right? And you could easily see that. We have 9 months left in the year here. And I think, you know, when you started the year, you were coming into a market that was, you know, where sentiment was extremely frothy, equity sentiment, very frothy at the end of December. You had a reset against that. Then you had, you know, some geopolitical concerns weighing in from the Ukraine and then the China shadow banking issues and all that kind of stuff. So there's
right.
all sorts of reasons to kind of reset lower here. But I think, you know, throughout the balance of the year, if we continue to see sort of a continuation that the economy is on a slow, gentle mend, and we have a Fed that seems to basically be reasonably dovish there.
But still tapering.
But,
okay.
But you know, I would argue that tapering does not equal hawkishness. I think it's been a tool that's been employed by the Fed that they don't really like anymore for a variety of reasons there. But I think, you know, if you Yellen's dialogue still has to be more fully developed and established with the markets here. But I'm expecting.
What do you mean by that? Her dialogue.
Well, when she came, you know, when she did her FOMC a few weeks back. During the press conference, I think she shook the short end of the Treasury curve, you know, and she
yes.
made some comments about, you know, hiking
raising rates.
Six
yes.
months after.
So you know. Think she just needs to clarify her rate strategy?
Yeah, and I think she clarifies that she started doing that a little bit away from FOMC just recently. I think as we get, we'll learn more about Yellen as the year goes through. But my guess is that she's going to err on the side of caution, and one
right.
way or the other will be, you know, probably marginally dovish here.
So I get your overall view on the market. So Michael, there's some stocks though, right, that you do like, or you like some of the big tech names like a Yahoo, for instance, or am I wrong about that?
Well, Yahoo is sort of an interesting separate case here because there's a lot of different things going on in it. But I think one just sort of high-level comment I would make is that in a market that is expensive here, the overall market is pretty expensive, that means that if money continues to come into the equity market, it has to find value. And so I think value stocks should continue to perform well this year. So stocks like Microsoft, Cisco, Intel, you know, if you strip out the cash, they're trading at multiples well below the S&P 500, and particularly if you look at them on a growth-adjusted basis, they're often much better on PEG ratios than the overall market. You mentioned Yahoo. I think Yahoo is a very interesting thing because it's on one hand, it's almost become an Alibaba tracking stock because
mm-hmm.
of all the excitement about that IPO.
Yep.
And
on the other hand?
And on the other hand, it has, you know, core Yahoo. If you actually do a sum of parts valuation on the stock, you can get to very, very cheap implied valuations for the core business. Now, the core business has not been growing over the last several quarters, and I
right.
think this, you know, the CEO and her team will be very much in the spotlight when earnings come up in the next few days. And that's going to, you know, if she can demonstrate growth there, then I think, you know, buying core Yahoo at 4x EBITDA will be pretty much a no-brainer.
But is she demonstrating the growth? Because so far, as you say, she's not. And I'm not sure if Madison Avenue is convinced that the millions she's piling into content is working so far.
Right. And exactly. And so it's, you know, it's going to be, you know, the glass may go half full to half empty on sentiment with respect to management if she can't start showing some levels of progress. Now, she will have, particularly after the Alibaba IPO, an even bigger war chest. So we don't know that the company can pay its bills and will stay in business. The question is can she put together the right assets and build this you know, core Yahoo business into something bigger and better and greater.
In terms of things you would avoid, just quickly, Michael, what would you want to stay away from?
Well, we talked about this morning on TV, but I think, you know, when you want to short certain things that look like you want to short them, it could be stocks, drillers like Transocean, or it could be even gold a couple of months ago, or could have been the EEM, an ETF that tracks emerging markets. If there's a lot of short interest, don't be very careful with your timing about jumping on the short, because there's been a lot of unfolding there.
All right. Michael, thank you so much for joining me again. Michael Purvis, the Chief Global Strategist at Wheaton. And a quick check again at midday on the markets. We're pretty much near the highs of the session. The Dow and the S&P up about 0.3%. The NASDAQ rallying, actually leading the gains there, up about 0.7%. And in the bond markets, the yield coming down 2.5 basis points, 2.7% even is where the 10-year yield is trading. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg Radio.
It's High Noon on In the Loop at the Half.
High Noon is when we feature our big guests for the session. And today we're featuring a big roundtable on Time Warner Cable and Comcast on their merger. Their executives are on the Hill as we speak, testifying on why this merger, this $45 billion merger, is good and is in the public's interest. Bloomberg, our Bloomberg News chief Washington correspondent Peter Cook is on the phone with us. Also, Porter Bibb, media analyst at MediaTek Capital Partners, is joining in as well. And Peter, first, give us an update on the hearing so far.
Well, the hearing's still underway in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it has been a pretty painful process, I would say, for the Comcast and Time Warner executives who've been testifying. They've had to face some tough questions from both Democrats and Republicans on this panel, wondering how this combination of the number one and number two cable companies in the country will affect consumers back in their home states. And not all the senators have been satisfied with the answers. Al Franken from Minnesota has been the one senator to say he opposes this deal. Others have just had some tough questions about the leverage, the sheer size and clout of this combined companies. And Executive Vice President for Comcast, David Cohen, has been parrying those questions pretty well so far. Mm-hmm. From one lobbyist I spoke to said, so far some hits, but no blood on the floor just yet.
Okay, so it sounds like overall a pretty skeptical audience there.
A skeptical audience to be expected, but not the outright opposition that maybe would have caused the greatest concern for Comcast. But it's obvious they've got their work to do to convince Washington this deal is a good deal for the public.
And Porter, you know, it's as Peter has pointed out to us many times, it's really the DOJ and the FCC who will ultimately approve this deal. But it is important to watch what Congress thinks about this. Do you believe that, you know, despite the skepticism, that this deal will get through, Porter?
I do believe it will get through. And it's interesting. I mean, Comcast has really laid the groundwork in pre-lobbying. They've even hired two former assistants to the Judiciary, the Senate Judiciary Committee, to advise them and to work the members from Al Franken, from Jay Rockefeller on down.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, what we're hearing is really that you got to flip it all around, because it's not, is this merger necessarily in the public interest, but can it really have a negative impact on the consumer and on the economy? And those are the issues that I think Comcast is going to prevail on.
And and you believe it's not?
I don't think so. It's really not about cable at all. It's about internet service and broadband. And we're going to have a very serious array of new legislative regulatory rules that the FCC is going to propose, that Congress is going to look at in the next session, probably after the midterm elections. And I personally don't think that Comcast is worried about failing, because they've already made huge concessions to the FCC about mm-hmm. net neutrality
right.
Through their NBC Universal acquisition 2 years ago. So those extend through 2018, and it's very likely that Comcast will push them out even further while some kind of new legislation or regulatory rules are written.
Peter, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I
I agree with Porter on that. And I think the question here in Washington is, since Comcast has already made those concessions to the FCC, given the politics around this and the criticism this deal is getting, even from some members of Congress, what else will the FCC and the DOJ ask for as concessions? Because my sense is that those concessions may not be enough on their own. There may have to be more.
I agree with Peter on both of those counts.
I was going to ask Peter this. So, Peter, you know, when AT&T was trying to acquire T-Mobile, I thought the word on the street was that they were going to get that deal through, and then surprisingly, it was rejected. I mean, is there any indication this time around? I mean, it seems everyone on the street seems confident this deal will go through. Is there any indication we are missing something here?
Well, I don't think you're missing anything, Betty, but I think this is a big deal. And in Washington, big deals get a lot of scrutiny, and this one's going to get a lot of scrutiny as well.
And
it's an election year. That's absolutely right. And the politics here are a little unusual. Again, this is consumer prices. We had a new issue sort of injected today by Senator Mike Lee of Utah questioning, given MSNBC and its political leanings, whether or not conservative voices could be drowned out by this combination. So there are lots of factors to this, Betty. Anything could happen here, but I think the odds are, given Comcast the ground laying that they've been done, the groundwork they've done, as Porter pointed out, that the odds are in their favor, but anything can happen.
Porter, what do you think? I mean, as you mentioned, this deal is really, you know, people talk about the video side of this, but it's really a lot about broadband.
That's
so
right.
What are AT&T, you know, Verizon, Google even, what are they going to do in reaction if, in fact, this deal goes through?
Well, they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place because both the telecoms and the cable companies need more spectrum. And one of the big issues in answering your question is later this year and through next year, the FCC will be auctioning off very, very significant bands of new spectrum. Who gets those is going to determine a lot of what the future internet service provision looks like. But yesterday, Comcast, they haven't announced it, but they did float the rumor that they're going to expand Wi-Fi networks and probably get into the phone business, competing with AT&T, and they're already there on the coax, the cable line telephone.
Right.
But if they get into Wi-Fi on a nationwide basis, they can be a very serious, viable competitor.
All right, Porter, we'll have to leave it there. Porter Bibb of Media Tech Capital Partners and Peter Cook, our chief Washington correspondent there on The Hill.
4 hours to go till the close. What are the four things you need to know?
We come to four to go, the four things you need to know as we head into the afternoon session and the closing bell. Dave Wilson joining me, our Bloomberg Stocks editor and author of The Visual Guide to Financial Markets. Dave, number four, we spoke about this earlier, Toyota and the recall.
That's right. 6.8 million cars and trucks recalled to repair five types of safety hazards. It's having an effect on Toyota's shares here in U.S. trading, not just at home in Japan. The stock's down 1.6% at the moment.
Okay, GM.
Right. The biggest U.S. automaker cut the equivalent of sell it, Morgan Stanley. The firm sees projections for dividends, stock buybacks, and North American profit margins as inappropriately high. And they're looking for the shares to fall back to the initial public offering price of $33 in the next 12 months. It's not far from there at this point after falling 2.1% today.
And your number two is a more obscure company, Intuitive Surgical.
Yeah, this is the company that makes Da Vinci robotic surgery systems. They came out with sales figures for the first quarter. Revenue fell 24%, more than analysts in the Bloomberg survey were expecting. And the actual number of Da Vinci systems sold sank 47%. Intuitive Surgical down 6.4% in today's trading. Biggest loss in the Standard & Poor's 500.
And your number one stock to watch is Alcoa.
Absolutely. The unofficial kickoff of first quarter earnings season, and it's proven positive for the largest U.S. aluminum maker. Company said an almost decade-long surplus of the metal that's hurt prices will end this year. And profit for the first quarter beat estimates, though revenue came up short. Now, Alcoa is the best performer in the S&P 500 on the day, up 3.5%.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Dave Wilson, our Bloomberg Stocks editor, author of The Visual Guide to Financial Markets. Speaking about the markets, Dow up 66 points, S&P higher as well, and the Nasdaq rallying by almost 1%. I'm Betty Lou. This is In the Loop at the Half on Bloomberg Radio.
You can listen to In the Loop at the Half with Betty Lou, weekdays at noon Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.